home for every Notre Dame football game.
Goodbye, Brandon Wimbush. 58 yards. Sanders is pulling away with every stride, and he goes in. 92 yards.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, presents.
Race is on. Josh Adams wins it. Touchdown, Notre Dame. 98 yards. 76-yard touchdown play to Equanimeous St. Brown.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Faulkner breaks one tackle down the near sideline, gets a block, cuts back inside. Touchdown, Faulkner and Mishawaka.
York now in front. Ogilvie, they score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four! Gets up and in by Rex Kluger with 1.5 seconds left. Notre Dame leads.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM WSBT, along with Eric Hansen. He is the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm WSBT Sports Director Darren Pritchett. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday evening, 7 minutes after the top of the hour. And coming up tonight, we'll recap Brian Kelly's press conference, which was earlier today, live on WSBT Radio. Other than news surrounding Brandon Wimbush, kind of a quiet day, but the Brandon Wimbush news is very, very important. We'll give you all the details coming up in just a moment. Also this hour, things we'd like to get to include, has the perception changed of Notre Dame football after their 4-1 start? What about the wide receiver depth chart for this week? And is North Carolina more dangerous than their record indicates? We've got our My 5 question of the day. Eric is an Associated Press college football voter. Who are his top five this week? We'll give you those answers coming up in just a little bit. Next hour, more on Wimbush, rapid fire, and we will look back at our predictions for the Major League Baseball season. That took place right before the regular season opener. Why are you grimacing?
I don't know. I don't even remember who I picked, but I don't think I picked well.
You did okay.
Okay.
The two teams that you have winning the pennant are both still alive.
Okay.
You had the Cubs and the Indians.
All right.
So you're still in good shape. So that's coming up on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, which is brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds and buy Sport Clips. If you have a question or comment, 574-282-2696. That's 574-282-2696. Thanks for joining us on 96.1 FM WSBT, on our stream at WSBTradio.com. And also, if you're listening to us on our podcast, hello to you. You can get the podcast, iTunes Store, Google Play Store. You can also get the WSBT Radio app free at those particular locations. But to the story of the day, as Notre Dame prepares to take on North Carolina in Chapel Hill Saturday afternoon at 3:30 on WSBT Radio. As of right now, there is a question on who will be the starting quarterback for the Fighting Irish against the Tar Heels. Eric kicked off the press conference today with Brian Kelly by asking him for an injury update on starting quarterback Brandon Wimbush, and here's what BK had to say.
I think we'll take it day to day right now. He experienced some foot soreness after the game, so we put him in a walking boot, which is fairly typical relative to procedures. We had an MRI and a X-ray. Both came back clean. No structural damage, no ligament damage. So we just want to be really cautious with him. And, we'll begin the process of practicing and see how he progresses during the week.
Okay. There's Brian Kelly talking about the status of Brandon Wimbush. We'll bring you a little more audio in regard to this subject in just a moment. But, Eric, we're in a spot right now where Brandon Wimbush is currently in a boot. The schedule today was just to have him throw while Ian Book is with the first team. And I guess the big hope is that he gets on the practice field tomorrow. Where do you feel like we stand right now with Brandon Wimbush?
Well, I think, Darren, sometimes it's really difficult because it's difficult, especially when you're not around the player It's difficult to know how fast of a healer they are. And sometimes you get these through these things pretty quick, and sometimes you don't. You know, I ran into Sean Stiers in the break room when I was grabbing some caffeine before the show, and he said he ran into Brandon Wimbush down near where Sean parks for the press conferences, and that Wimbush looked pretty hobbled and was on crutches. And so, you know, I think they're going to play it day by day. You know, tomorrow is a critical day in terms of practicing. And if he can't practice tomorrow, then I think you'll see Ian Book's reps rev up to 90% or 100%. And then they'll kind of monitor Brandon and see if he can play at all. You know, the thing is, he knows enough about the offense and the game plan that he could jump in and contribute Saturday, even if he wasn't feeling great until Friday. But, you know, do you want to do that? There's a couple of points I think we need to make. One, Brian Kelly said there was no structural damage via the X-ray or the MRI, and that this, in Brian's opinion, was about playing with pain and how much pain can you tolerate. But the question is, even if it's a soft tissue injury, which it appears to be, are you setting him back further by trying to push him this week when you could have him sit out against North Carolina, have the bye week for healing, and then be ready for USC? So I think there's a lot of interesting things in play. If you were to ask me what my gut feeling is as far as who starts on Saturday against North Carolina, I would say Ian Book. That would be my guess. And that is a guess, but that would be my gut feeling at this point.
Very interesting. So you heard it right there. Eric's gut is telling him that Ian Book would be behind center, or a few steps behind center, in today's college football, right, Saturday against North Carolina. So Brian Kelly was asked today what Brandon would need to do in practice this week in order to be able to play on Saturday.
I think he could miss. He could miss Tuesday. I think he would need to do something on Wednesday. But does he need to take 60% of the reps? Probably not. So I'm not in a rush to judge here where he's going to be. I think we're still pretty optimistic that you know, he's going to be able to do something. So we'll see. Again, it's early in the week for us. I know it's a little later for you guys because this is the only time you'll see me until Thursday. But we haven't even gotten him out of the boot to kind of move him around yet.
So, Brian Kelly and what Brandon needs to do in order to play, kind of to be determined at this particular time. Eric, do you believe having a bye next week and this week's opponent, North Carolina, would factor into a decision if it was close and whether to allow Brandon to play or not? Or can you not take things for granted? You can't just say North Carolina's 1-4, you play Ian Book and everything's going to be fine.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with what you think of Ian Book as your starter. The positive is there's not a lot of tape on him, so it's difficult to kind of game plan for him. The other thing is the North Carolina matchup. You know, I researched what Brian Kelly did in these situations in the past, and we can get into that later. But specifically, they've been pretty balanced when he's had to go with an injured, when he's had to go with a surprise starter for an injured quarterback. But North Carolina is 112th in the country in rush defense. Notre Dame is 7th in the country in rush offense. I think even if North Carolina loaded the box, you could impose your will a little bit in the running game more than a lot of other teams. And so Ian Book being a starter against North Carolina, I think, is more palatable. So let me tell you Brian Kelly's history in this situation. He's been an FBS coach for 14 years. He was at Grand Valley before that. So let's just look at those 14 years. This would be the 9th time he would have an emergency starter. And in those previous 8 games, he's 7-1. And in 6 of those 8 times, it was a guy making his first career college start. The only guy to lose was Dan LeFevre at Central Michigan going up against Michigan in the Big House, which I don't think anybody would blame him for that. But every other game, when Brian Kelly has been in this situation, he's managed it very well, and his teams have won.
You asked Brian Kelly today about getting Ian Book ready for a possible start. Again, if you're just joining us, we're doing some speculating. There is some concern about Brandon Wimbush. The right foot is in a boot as of right now. And the schedule today was he was going to throw on the side and hopefully he would be able to practice tomorrow, but no guarantees. So Eric asked the logical question. So how do you get Ian Book ready? What is the situation? Brian Kelly answered that question earlier today.
Know me pretty good. We're a 6-4 rep split operation. So he's been getting a lot of work through camp, through the season. So he's got a lot of meaningful reps. This is not a NFL operation where the starting quarterback gets all the work. It's a 60-40 split of reps. So he's gotten quite a bit of work, leading up to this point. So we'll see where Brandon is, whether that changes or not. We'll get a look at it today. But if we've got to increase his reps, that would be the first thing that we would do.
How do you think the offense would look dramatically different with Ian Book, if at all? And let me just ask a question to kind of set you up. What we've seen from Ian Book, including Saturday, does that give us a little idea of what to expect?
Well, Darren, when you look at Ian Book, he's got about as many career passing attempts and a career rushing attempts that Brandon Wimbush had on September 1st, the day before he started against Temple. He also had to learn a new offense in the offseason. As far as how he expresses the offense, especially if Brandon was completely ruled out of Saturday, not even as an emergency backup, I think you would see fewer quarterback runs. What we've seen of Ian Book running the ball, he's been pretty good. He's not as dynamic as Brandon in terms of being able to outrun secondaries sometimes, but I think he's an adequate runner. I think he can execute that part of the offense, and he seems to be a very accurate thrower. I had a chance to talk to his high school coach back in the spring, Eric Cavalier from Oak Ridge High School. Ian played in a really competitive league. The Sierra Foothill League is one of the best leagues in the United States. It's big schools, a lot of Division I kids. So the game speeds up in college, but not quite as dramatically. And Ian was in a pro-style offense his sophomore, junior year as a starter. He switched to a spread his senior year and picked it up like that. He completed 71% of his passes, over 3,000 yards, a 30-5 touchdown to interception ratio, averaged 6 yards a carry with 12 touchdowns. And that was after having zero planned quarterback runs for the 2 years leading up to it. So he's a quick learner. He's an accurate passer. He's not as dynamic as a runner. We don't know what his decisions would be like in terms of being pressured. But North Carolina doesn't really have the personnel to really get to you against Notre Dame's offensive line. They're struggling as a defense. They have injury problems of their own. They were missing 8 starters Saturday against Georgia Tech and have lost 13 players for the season.
Well, Eric, it's going to be an interesting couple of days. Again, we will not hear from Brian Kelly again until Thursday after practice. So there will be a ton of speculation about Wimbush and Book over the next 48 hours until you hear from Brian Kelly about probably 6 o'clock on Thursday. A lot can happen over the next couple of days. But the fact that he's in a boot right now, I guess, concerns you about Saturday. People recover at a different rate. Totally get that. It's not uncommon to put a boot on in a situation like this. But tomorrow's going to be a big day for Brandon Wimbush, it would seem.
I would expect that as well. And if I'm North Carolina's defensive coordinator, besides the fact that I'm scrambling right now because I'm rated in the hundreds in scoring offense, scoring defense, total defense, pass efficiency defense, rushing defense, what my game plan would be is to force whichever one's playing into beating me with their arm. I would put 8 and 9 guys in a box, and really just test them and say, throw the ball downfield, and I'm willing to take my chances with that. And I would expect Ian Book to play, but I'd be ready for Wimbush.
Okay, so we'll follow this story as it develops. Again, if you're just joining us, Irish quarterback Brandon Wimbush, his right foot is in a boot right now. Not practicing today. Fingers crossed he will practice tomorrow. Ian Book is the guy right now at practice today for the Fighting Irish. And just to throw this out there, there was a question asked to Brian Kelly at the press conference when the injury took place. They're not sure. There was a follow-up question if it happened in a non-football situation. Brian Kelly said, I'm going by what Brandon Wimbush told me. I trust in the information he is giving me. So as far as we know, the injury took place during the game on Saturday. When? No one knows. So that's where we are right now.
We know it wasn't the fourth quarter because he didn't play in the fourth
quarter. And he said it started to act up, Saturday night?
Yeah.
After he left the stadium.
Right.
So that's where we are right now with that particular storyline. So, of course, we'll keep you updated. South Bend Tribune, IndyInsider.com. Your normal outlets for the information as we cover this story. Brandon Wimbush, will he start at North Carolina? Enter dramatic music right there. Ian Book, getting ready, just in case. 22 minutes after the top of the hour. Coming up next, has the perception changed of Notre Dame football at all with this 4-1 start? We'll talk to Eric about that. Plus, whoever plays quarterback for the Fighting Irish Saturday, who will be the wide receivers they're throwing to? We'll talk about that and more coming up as Sports Beat continues. Brought to you by Budweiser and Sport Clips on WSBT Radio.
This is Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Dexter Williams, he's on the run, down to the 2-yard line.
On Michiana's sports leader.
Running, throwing, sack. Coming on the play was Tevon Coney.
96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here's the throw to the end zone. Caught, touchdown, Irish. Equanimeous St. Brown.
And we are back on Budweiser's weekday sports beat on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM WSBT. 12 o'clock, Saturday, Budweiser's game day sports beat. Sean Stiers and I will be right here in studio. Eric is the lucky guy. He's in beautiful Chapel Hill, North Carolina for the Notre Dame, North Carolina game, writing for the South Bend Tribune, IndyInsider.com, and of course, offering his insight. Budweiser's game day sports beat pregame at 9, our program noon to 2:30, kickoff at 3:30, and after the game, Reggie Brooks and I will have the official Notre Dame football postgame show here on 96.1 FM WSBT. It's been a lot of fun working with Reggie so far this year, and looking forward to another evening of football conversation here on WSBT Radio. Eric, a couple of times as this season has started to unfold, we've had the discussion, whether it be the Georgia game, and I think the Michigan State game falls into this category. If you beat this team, it helps the perception of Notre Dame. There is a perception across the country. They won 4 games last year, so you have to change what this program is all about from the outside looking in perspective. Eric, they're 4-1 right now. The 4 victories have been very comfortable victories. The 1 loss, a heartbreaker, 1 point on their home turf to what appears to be definitely a top 10 football team, maybe the second best team in the SEC. Some would argue they might be right there with Alabama. Some might say they might be a little better than the Crimson Tide. With all that being said, do you feel like the storyline has changed at all? And again, we're talking about people outside this area. We're not talking about the Notre Dame media beat or Irish fans or people inside the Goog. We're talking about the other people, Eric, that write stories that don't know what they're talking about a lot of times and just go with the Notre Dame theme when things go bad. Do you feel like the perception has changed with what has happened so far this year, or is it going to take a win at North Carolina and a win over USC to really get that train rolling?
Well, I think a win over USC would certainly help, and I was listening to Mark Packer on Sirius XM coming in because I didn't want to get financial advice. He was talking about Notre Dame and saying that he felt like the way Georgia has played since, and Notre Dame both have changed his perception about Notre Dame, and he thinks Notre Dame may actually have a chance to win the USC game. USC game is going to shape a lot of perceptions. All those games after the bye are, and if he lost to North Carolina or struggled with them, that would be, you know, a cause to tap the brakes a little bit. But where we are now in this particular week, I think Notre Dame is gaining respect. We haven't heard a lot of hot seat stories the past couple of weeks. People are actually trying to speculate about their postseason, what that might look like. I wrote about it on Monday. You know, there were some bowl scouts there, Orange Bowl, Cotton Bowl, and the Citrus properties, which is the Camping World Bowl and the Citrus Bowl. They were there. And so people are kind of thinking more along those lines. Now, again, you've had seasons 2014 where Notre Dame got off to a fast start and then things went south in the second half of that season. But I would say they're building some pretty good momentum right now. And if they take care of business at North Carolina, that's just going to grow. They'll be in the top 20 when they face USC on October 21st after the bye week.
Well, barring a rash of injuries or something just very odd happening, the BK hot seat storyline is pretty much dead. It's going to take something, I mean, catastrophic to bring that storyline back to life. That's a flatliner story right now, in my particular opinion. I think a story that could start to pop up in November, Eric, if things continue in the direction it's going, I would say there's a better possibility of a storyline developing at what is next for Mike Elko in terms of being a head coach sometime. Eric, after what he's done at Bowling Green, Wake Forest, and 1 year at Notre Dame, I'm not saying next year it's going to happen, but I think there might be some momentum as teams across the country are looking for answers. The job that Mike has done this year, it's going to bring extra spotlight to his name after seeing how awful at times this defense was last year to now where they are right now through five games. It's been a remarkable turnaround.
Right. And there are challenges ahead for this defense. I don't want to give people a false sense of security because
absolutely not.
There are either star players or star offenses on the horizon. You know, Bryce Love, the leading rusher in the country, is coming up. Zach Abbey from Navy and their offense is coming up. Miami, Mark Walton is the fifth leading rusher and their quarterback looks pretty good so far. And NC State and USC and Wake Forest, you know, none of those look like teams that are you're just going to snuff. I don't see them holding those teams to 20 points, but I do see them being competitive. I like where this defense is headed because I think it's improving.
That's why I said if things continue to go in the right direction,
right.
That's the key phrase in my statement.
But Mike Elko,
he's a rising star.
He absolutely is. I think what he's done and what he will continue to do, and then I think you'll really see who Mike Elko is in 2018. I think when he's had, not that everybody has to learn the system, I think once he gets some more of, you know, some more reinforcements at safety and the defensive line, they're going to start to be a really good defense, you know, a top 25 type defense. I think they will be in 2018.
We had a listener phone in a moment ago. We had a discussion in the opening segment of the program. If you were not with us, we spent time talking about starting quarterback Brandon Wimbush right now at a walking boot. And Ian Book getting the reps in practice today. Right now, Brandon Wimbush is day-to-day with this injury. Eric, feels like there's an outside chance Ian Book might start this game against North Carolina on Saturday. A listener wanted to ask this question, and he wants to know what would happen if Book is a better passer than Wimbush. The Carla wants to know just your thoughts on that particular subject. I think we've talked about this in the spring and during fall practice, but let's bring it up again since Brandon has struggled throwing the football over the first five football games, so I think it's fair to at least bring this up again in conversation.
Yeah, I mean, if he has a really good game against North Carolina, you know, North Carolina is the worst pass defense Notre Dame will see this season. So I'm not sure that that's a measure of, oh, wow, he was 14 of 18 for 220 yards. Let's bench Brandon Wimbush. I think what it gives you is a safety net in case something happens to Brandon Wimbush. I'm confident that, and Brian Kelly kind of addressed how he talks to Brandon Wimbush and how much confidence he has in him. Brian Kelly has seen how good of a quarterback and a passer Brandon can be, and I think he's committed to sticking with him, even if Ian Book were to shine against the 112th best pass defense in the country. And I'm not being snarky about North Carolina, because I'll tell you what, even with all the injuries and even with not being a very good defense, they still have led in four of their losses. They've led in three of them going into the fourth quarter. So it's not like they've rolled over. You know, Georgia Tech was the only team that kind of rolled them. Everybody else, it's been a pretty good fight.
And Old Dominion, I just don't feel like it counts.
Old Dominion, yes.
That's their victory, 53-23 on the road.
Right.
So you feel like North Carolina should be taken more seriously by fans who are just looking at the 1-4 record and the 33-7 loss to Georgia Tech on Saturday, in which they gave up 403 rushing yards.
Well, they've been better in their other games, you know, against Cal and Duke. You know, they've been better in those games and competitive in those games. They are an injured team, but and I've been in Keenan Memorial Stadium before. It was 9 years ago. They're not football fans. You know, they're basketball fans. They're waiting for basketball to come. But I just think Notre Dame, I think maybe fans can overlook North Carolina. I don't think Notre Dame can overlook North Carolina.
If they didn't overlook Miami after that Michigan State game, it's hard to believe that they're going to overlook North Carolina after the Miami game.
Well, and I think the whole Brandon Wimbush injury is kind of a rallying point, too. You know, they don't know whether Brandon is going to play or not, and they want to rally around whoever the quarterback's going to be.
And you got a bye week next week. So you got a little carrot out in front of you to basically leave it out on the line. You got a bye week. Now, if USC was next week, then I would be a little concerned about this particular game. But I just think if you came out the way you did against Miami after that great game against Michigan State, I just can't imagine you're going to lay an egg starting out the game against North Carolina after Miami and a bye week looking you straight in the face.
Yeah, I mean, Darren, the equalizer is always turnovers. If you get into a multiple turnover game, you can let anybody back in a game and lose to anybody. I remember in the North Carolina game in 2008, off the top of my head, I think Notre Dame was ahead at halftime, and Jimmy Clausen threw a pick six early in that second half, and North Carolina ended up winning that game. And that was, when I say North Carolina was ranked and Notre Dame was on the verge of being ranked, and that kind of, in some ways, was the beginning of the end for Charlie. He ended up making it through the end of the 2008 season, but then 2009, you know, they just never were good on defense. And the other thing about this North Carolina team, they gave Notre Dame a heck of a game in 2014, 50-43 up here in South Bend. And so, you know, I never discount a team. They're a Power 5 team. And again, you get into that bad turnover differential, and Notre Dame hasn't. They've been good at turning other people over. They've been good at taking care of the ball. But if you get sloppy, you know, and we don't predict a hurricane this year in North Carolina when there's a road game in that state.
I don't want to bring up the negative, but if Wimbush can't go and Book plays and gets hurt, then that brings a whole other conversation to play about North Carolina's chances.
Absolutely. I mean, then you're looking at either Montgomery Van Gorder or Avery Davis. And Avery Davis, you know, is a true freshman who's, I'm sure, been working with the scout team. And Montgomery Van Gorder, you know, his experience on the football field other than Saturday has been holding. It hasn't been playing quarterback. And so you could say, well, you can just hand off to Josh Adams and all those guys. But if Montgomery Van Gorder were in the game, you might see 10 guys in the box trying to stop the run. So it would certainly be a test. But, you know, I just don't write off Power 5 teams. Right. North Carolina is a couple of years removed, just like Notre Dame, from being in the playoff conversation. North Carolina got into the ACC championship game against Clemson and actually was pretty competitive. What's really hurt North Carolina during Larry Fedora's time is they can't stop the run. You talk about Notre Dame kind of being a chronically underachieving run defense. North Carolina makes Notre Dame look like, you know, the steel curtain. I mean, they've been in the hundreds the last 4 years, and they were in the 80s the year before that in run defense.
It's interesting you bring up that North Carolina game from 2014. Just a couple of weeks before that 40-point performance by North Carolina, Brian Van Gorder shuts out Michigan. That seems like a long time ago, doesn't it?
Well, you know, and that's the thing, and that's why you are a little bit cautious, because Notre Dame has held every opponent this year to 20 points or fewer. In 2014, the first five games, Notre Dame held every opponent to 20 points or fewer. They played North Carolina in game six. North Carolina spread them out, sped them up, ran 84 plays, and almost beat them. And Notre Dame was never the same on defense. Other teams copycat. And so they said, Northwestern, which wasn't an up-tempo team, let's up-tempo. And Notre Dame went into a big slide, and they gave up tons of points and tons of yards the rest of that season.
I don't like the symmetry of that story.
Well, I think what you're going to see different is Mike Elko. I think this North Carolina game, I think this is kind of the story of that game, is that, you know, if they hold North Carolina's offense down, you know, then you kind of say, okay, this is different. Because the 2012 team allowed 20 points or fewer in their first eight games of that season. And they didn't have they didn't cave in until the Alabama game in the championship, but they were really good. In game nine, they gave up 26 points, but it was a triple overtime game.
And for Elko, it's an opponent he's familiar with in the ACC. That doesn't hurt.
Absolutely.
16 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you. I want to get to one more thing in this segment. Irish wide receiver depth chart for this week. Anything different?
Well, Notre Dame gives us a depth chart every week, and I actually email it to you. And when you look at it, you'll see this. They pretty much put out the same depth chart every week. So who's listed as the starters? Cam Smith as an outside wide receiver, it looks like. Chase Claypool at the slot receiver, and Equanimeous St. Brown as an outside receiver. I would flip-flop Cam Smith and Equanimeous, Cam Smith and Claypool. I think Claypool's going to be on the outside.
I would think so.
Stefferson's not listed. Kevin Stefferson is going to play in this game.
That's what I was just going to say. Is that a sign they're moving Claypool inside and Stefferson shows up outside?
No,
I'm not sure of that. I'm not buying that.
I don't think there's a lot of diligence given to this depth chart once the first one comes out. I think, you know, it's kind of an afterthought, and so I don't pay a great deal of attention to it because it usually doesn't line up perfectly with what we see on the field.
Coming up next, who are the top five teams in college football right now? Eric Hansen does this for a living. He gets to be Associated Press voter each and every week. We'll see who made his top five, and we'll ask him where he ranked the Fighting Irish this week. That's coming up. You're listening to Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser and Sport Clips on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Eric Hansen is an Associated Press college football voter, so we ask him each week to name his top five teams in his latest voting. But before we get to the top five, in terms of Notre Dame, what did you do with the Fighting Irish after their convincing victory over Miami?
I moved them up to 17, so they are higher in my poll for the first time, I think, than they are in the actual poll. But there's some other teams like San Diego State that weren't real impressive last week, and again, you kind of revisit wins of teams earlier in the year. And that, the Georgia and Michigan State wins are definitely affecting me. What Michigan State did to Iowa and Georgia did to Tennessee played into my ranking for Notre Dame.
Irish are tied for 21st in the AP poll this week with the Florida Gators.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to your top five. Who's the number five team of the country as of right now?
I'm going with the Penn State Nittany Lions, and they could certainly move up once they start playing the other Big Ten powers, but right now that's where I have Penn State.
Okay, number four.
Oklahoma Sooners. They were off, I believe, this last week. They had a narrow win over Baylor, but they do have that impressive win over Ohio State.
If things work out right, you could have a TCU-Oklahoma game that could be very, very important down the road. But TCU's got a nationally-ranked West Virginia team coming to town this week. Going through Eric's top five teams in the country and his latest AP vote, number three.
I went with the Georgia Bulldogs. I am really sold on their defense. The one thing I'm not sold on is what's going to happen with Jacob Eason coming back to play quarterback and if that's going to be a win-win situation for Georgia.
I saw in the stats against Tennessee he threw a pass.
Yes, he
did. See what they do with him.
But Fromm is playing well. Jake Fromm, the kid that started against Notre Dame, is playing well.
Your number two team in the country.
Alabama. And I think right now that there's a, you know, there's a gap between one and two and three and the rest. But Alabama's playing awfully good on both sides of the ball. The weird thing is they are not going to have kind of the killer schedule that they typically have. And it's by no fault of their own. The SEC West just isn't as good this year as it has been in the past.
Could you say that about the entire SEC right now? It's been a trend the last couple of years.
Yeah.
One person wrote recently, it's the worst group of head coaches in a Power 5 conference. I thought that was an interesting statement. So Eric's AP top five vote, number five, Penn State, number four, Oklahoma, Georgia three, Alabama number two, and number one.
I'm one of the 17 people that picked Clemson. I just think that they've proven more to me at this point. Doing this is like a puzzle. Every week you get a few more clues. And so the clues that I've gotten is that Clemson and the Smoking Pig are both number one.
And their defense might be the best of the last 3 years.
I wouldn't argue that.
That's Eric's AP top five vote for this week. And our My Five question of the day from Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, I've got all the latest that's going on with Notre Dame football, including the Ian Book, Brandon Wimbush mystery. We have lots of high school stuff this week, including tennis regionals tonight and girls soccer and, of course, much, much more.
I guess it would be the laziness of the sports media that we would call this a gate. With Wimbush and Book.
Yeah. QB gate.
QB gate or ankle gate or something.
Foot gate.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, we've been talking about Brandon Wimbush. His right foot is in a walking boot right now. And Ian Book was taking the number one reps at practice today. Fingers crossed Wimbush might be able to do something tomorrow in practice. But Eric, we've got about 30 seconds. You said earlier you wouldn't be shocked if Book starts this game.
I would not be shocked. You know, I need to see evidence of difference, especially with Brandon Wimbush being on crutches today. That just doesn't seem like it lends itself to him being ready for Saturday.
The discussion continues in a couple of moments. Eric will talk to you tomorrow. Sean joins me next here on WSBT South Bend.
The home of Notre Dame. Your home for every Notre Dame football game.
Goodbye, Brandon Wimbush. 58 yards. Sanders is pulling away with every stride, and he goes in. 92 yards.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents.
Race is on. Josh Adams wins it. Touchdown, Notre Dame. 98 yards. 76-yard touchdown play to Equanimeous St. Brown.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Faulkner breaks one tackle down the near sideline, gets a block, cuts back inside, touchdown Faulkner and Mishawaka.
York now in front, Ogilvie, they score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four! Chipped up and in by Rex Kluger with 1.5 seconds left! Notre Dame leads!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Presented by Budweiser and Sport Clips. This is Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 FM, WSBT. Sean and Darren with you from our WSBT studios in Mishawaka. Major League Baseball postseason gets underway in just about 53 minutes from the Bronx, Yankee Stadium. It's the AL wildcard game. The Minnesota Twins, the first team in baseball history to lose 100 games the previous year, then make the postseason the next. They'll take on the mighty New York. York Yankees in a winner-take-all wild card game. The winner heads to Cleveland for the American League Divisional Series. Tomorrow, the National League wild card will take place in the desert. Colorado is at Arizona. I was looking just during that break, trying to see if Joe Madden named a starting pitcher for Game 1. I have not found it yet. If he said it today,
I haven't seen it either.
I watched a portion of his press conference on the MLB Network. He never mentioned it. They never mentioned it. And I don't believe the Nationals or the Cubs have named that starter yet. Max Scherzer had a hamstring injury in his last start of the regular season. He was asked if he's going to face the Cubs in the NLDS. Quote, oh, I'm pitching in the NLDS, end quote. He was asked again about it, and quote, I'm pitching in the NLDS, end quote. That doesn't mean he's pitching in Game 1, but he'll pitch at some point in the National League Divisional Series. Probably Steven Strasburg, Gio Gonzalez would be the other choices if Scherzer does not go in Game 1. And outside of the Astros-Red Sox series, the Nationals and the Cubs, a very intriguing series. The Cubs, the defending champs, the Nationals trying to finally get out of the first round of the playoffs. They have won the division a handful of times the last few years, but they have not been to the National League Championship Series. Pressure on the Nationals, which is rare. Normally the defending champs have the pressure in a series like this. I don't think so.
And I was reading a Q&A thing with Theo Epstein earlier today, and that's what he was saying is really the Cubs' biggest advantage going into this postseason is just the experience factor they have after not only winning the World Series last year, but they also got to the NLCS the year before that. And so the core of the team has been through both of those experiences. And on the subject of pitching, I was just looking. Jesse Rogers, who covers the Cubs for ESPN.com. The only thing about pitching that came up is saying Jake Arrieta is going to pitch either Game 3 or Game 4. That's about that's pretty much all I've seen regarding that, too. The interesting thing, though, is the Indians in the American League, did you see what they're going to do with their rotation?
I did, and I was scratching my head a little bit.
Trevor Bauer, Game 1, and I know he's pitching really well right now. Corey Kluber in Game 2, and the only problem with that is if it goes to Game 5, you'd say, okay, well, Kluber could still potentially come back, but he'd have to come back on short rest, and whether or not, and that's the thing about Game 1. The Game 1 starter is the guy who's guaranteed that he'll get a second start, not on short rest, if it goes to 5 games.
Well, it sounds like they might come back with Kluber in 5. I don't know. They said something about it would keep him on normal rest.
I don't know how that would... Well, I don't know what the days off are.
All I know is his arm was dead for Game 7 of the World Series last year.
And that's the thing. They had the whole postseason, because of their pitching situation with those couple guys out, he had to come back on short rest all the time, and it obviously caught up with him by Game 7 of the World Series. But
I want that horse out there in Game 1 myself to set the tone.
I would think so. And I don't care how good Bauer is pitching, Kluber is your guy.
And since all Cub fans try to help Joe Madden in handling the bullpen and Aroldis Chapman correctly in Game 6 and Game 7 of the World Series last year, I'll just say to him, I think Kyle Hendricks is your best choice for Game 1.
Probably is right now.
He's terrific.
Yeah.
Terrific.
He's really picked it up over these last couple months.
Didn't do a whole lot wrong in the postseason last year, if I remember correctly. Was terrific in Game 7.
Just a lot of short outings in the postseason. That was it.
Yep.
But I guess all the starters did, for that matter, the way Madden managed the bullpen.
I wrote today, I didn't necessarily agree with Francona's decision with Kluber in Game 2, but I have so much respect for him. It's worked well for him through the years. You can't really go against his decisions. And I mentioned he outmanaged Joe Madden in the World Series. He just didn't win.
Yeah, I mean, again, being shorthanded, there's a reason they had to go to Andrew Miller so much. They were down a couple of big arms. Getting all the way to Game 7, almost winning that, and then you go back the fact of what he did in Boston, winning 2 World Series. It's hard to argue with the decisions he's going to make.
In our last segment this hour, we're going to look back at our preseason MLB predictions.
I don't want to.
Are you nervous?
I don't remember exactly what I picked, but I know there's probably only a couple that ended up being right.
I have one that's an absolute clunker. That just blew up. Injuries were a big part of it, but it was a bad decision. The rest were okay. So we'll get to that coming up in a little bit. But the story we're following very closely in these parts centers around who will start at quarterback for Notre Dame Saturday in Chapel Hill against North Carolina. Brandon Wimbush is a little banged up right now, as we found out today when we heard from Fighting Irish head coach Brian Kelly. His Tuesday press conference was live on WSBT Radio at noon, and here's what BK had to say about Brandon Wimbush.
I think we'll take it day to day right now. He experienced some foot soreness after the game, so we put him in a walking boot. Which is fairly typical relative to procedures. We had an MRI and a X-ray. Both came back clean. No structural damage, no ligament damage. So we just want to be really cautious with him. And, we'll begin the process of practicing and see how he progresses during the week.
Well, not the news we were hoping to hear today.
No.
Not at all.
There was a lot of rumors about this. I had heard it since Sunday, and unfortunately, it became reality. Eric was telling the story that you actually saw Brandon.
Yeah, walked by him, and he had his crutches and his walking boot on as I was leaving. It was down by the soccer stadium. I parked down by the baseball lot, and so just walking down here, I'm getting closer to this guy, and here's this guy kind of moving very slowly with crutches and a walking boot, and that's who it was. I've never been in one of those walking boots, never seen anyone in one of those walking boots. It kind of reminded me of, have you ever been snow skiing by any chance?
Going by no scars on my legs or surgeries, I have not.
So I'll take that as a no. Well, when you put those boots on, you don't move very well. It's kind of like you're pretty clunky moving around, and that's kind of what it looked like when he was walking with that boot and those crutches.
So what we know right now is Brandon was scheduled just to get out at practice today and throw the football with the walking boot on, and then fingers crossed he might be able to do something tomorrow. But the fact is, Ian Book was going to get the number one reps in practice today. Now, it's good he's gotten his feet wet in some games this year, so that's a positive.
Right.
It wouldn't be that first time going out onto the football field. But Brian Kelly was asked today, well, if Brandon doesn't practice today and tomorrow, what are the guidelines? What does he need to do in order to play the game on Saturday? Here's what BK had to say.
I think he could miss. He could miss Tuesday. I think he would need to do something on Wednesday. But does he need to take 60% of the reps? Probably not. So I'm not in a rush to judge here where he's going to be. I think we're still pretty optimistic that he's going to be able to do something. So we'll see. Again, it's early in the week for us. I know it's a little later for you guys because this is the only time you'll see me until Thursday. But we haven't even gotten him out of the boot to kind of move him around yet.
Well, BK, you can stop by the captain session tomorrow if you like. I'll be there.
That's right.
And you can just pass along the information, put it on a note card, and just hand it to me, and we'll be happy to pass it along.
It's an opportunity.
Brian, I would do that for you. I'm here for you.
That's right.
Help me help you. So I'm just putting it out there, BK. I'll be happy to help out. I'll do whatever it takes for the ball club.
That's
all about the ball club.
Take one for the team.
Whatever Nuke LaLoose said in Bull Durham, that's the saying I'm going with.
Happy
right
to be
now.
Here.
Just happy to be here. Do whatever it takes to help the ball club. Well, let's face it. It's concerning he's got a boot on at this stage with a game on Saturday. I asked Eric his opinion last hour, and he felt like there's a really good chance Ian Book is the starting quarterback for the Irish against North Carolina. And I just brought up the fact Carolina's struggling right now. They're giving up a lot of rushing yards. You don't take anything for granted, though. You're going on the road against a Power 5 conference team. Turnovers, another injury at the quarterback position. A lot of things can change the complexion of this game. And as Eric has pointed out, in three games this year, they've led going into the fourth quarter of the four games they've lost. So they've been more competitive than it showed, although they got ran over by Georgia Tech in Atlanta last Saturday. So I don't want to take anything for granted, but also if it's in doubt, if there's a chance he could play, is it worth sitting him? You got a bye week, and then you got that big tilt against USC. You can't overlook Carolina. I get that. But as you kind of take these puzzle pieces and move them around, you just figure out a way, can you win this game without putting Brandon Wimbush at risk, knowing there's a bye week next week? Do I think like that? Am I out of my mind?
No, I don't think you're out of your mind at all.
At least
I think
about
if
that.
There's a chance, because again, if you saw him today with the boot and the crutches, you're thinking, man, that doesn't look like a guy who's going to be ready. But at the same time, how precautionary is that? You're keeping as much pressure off it as you can, and as awkward as it looks, is it really that bad? The main thing is, and Brian Kelly said, I mean, they could go all the way up until game time, it sounded like. And if Brandon Wimbush says he feels good enough to go, he would go. But going back to what you said, you do have a week off now. And if and North Carolina is not good against the run. Notre Dame is averaging more than 300 yards a game on the ground. So it would seem like the kind of matchup where if you could play more precautionary, that you wouldn't, it wouldn't make as much sense to try to rush him back for this game.
Well, what about Ian Book? Getting him ready for a possible start against North Carolina, Brian Kelly addressed that subject earlier today.
Know me pretty good. We're a 6-4 rep split operation. So he's been getting a lot of work through camp, through the season. So he's got a lot of meaningful reps. This is not a NFL operation where the starting quarterback gets all the work. It's a 60-40 split of reps. So he's gotten quite a bit of work, you know, leading up to this point. So we'll see where Brandon is, whether that changes or not. We'll get a look at it today. But if we've got to increase his reps, that would be the first thing that we would do.
I guess the first thing that comes to mind, a few less quarterback runs. If it's Ian Book behind center, throw a beautiful ball down the field to Chris Fink against Miami. He's got a stronger arm than I thought. It really showed up in the blue goal game this spring, and I don't base, trust me, a lot on the blue goal game, but his arm strength actually surprised me. So I left spring practice more convinced that if we got into a spot like this, the offense would be in a little better shape than I thought. I still think, Sean, despite Wimbush being inconsistent throwing the football through the first five games, I feel like there is still a gap between the two that would show up over an extended period of time. It may not show up Saturday, but I would think if you had a chance to get a little more data, I think it would show up then.
Yeah, and that's going back to what I was just saying before about Kelly kind of leaving it to where Wimbush could decide Friday or Saturday or whatever, that his foot feels good enough that it could go that long as he felt good enough and he could move on it, that he would be the guy. I mean, there's a reason that Kelly would give Wimbush that kind of leeway, because as popular as Ian Book is, being the number two quarterback with some of Wimbush's inconsistencies, there's a reason Brian Kelly would give him that much leeway almost all the way up until game time, because he is the better quarterback. And I just feel, and again, we haven't seen sort of a full game plan Ian Book. We've seen him plunked in mop-up time, but he's not going to be doing the same things that Wimbush can do. Now, he can run the ball, he can scramble a little bit, but he's not going to be, I don't think, as much read option type of mm-hmm. stuff, and that opens things up for the rest of the running game as well. So they're going to have to suit this thing to Ian Book, and we haven't seen, again, full game plan Ian Book and exactly what that would entail. I would imagine that it's going to be a lot even safer and more conservative if he is out there, because this is a guy who would be, who has even less experience coming into this season anyway, even less experience than Brandon Wimbush. And again, he's seen some time, but it's mostly mop-up time. He hasn't had to go out there and really do it under pressure. He hasn't had to make all those reads that Wimbush has had to make and face the pressure that Wimbush has had to face.
In hockey terms, I'm tired of Notre Dame lower body injuries the last couple of weeks. Between the running backs and now Wimbush, foot and ankles have been a pain in the neck over the last couple of weeks, with Adams and Williams and Jones Jr. dealing with ankle injuries. Now we got Wimbush. I think I'm done with lower body injuries for a little while.
TGI Mike Bean, the athletic trainer And that question came up, and I'm sure you've seen it. He created this ankle brace. Have you seen this?
I saw that, yeah.
He created this new ankle brace, and Brian Kelly was talking about it, how this ankle brace, the way whatever it does, it has put guys in a situation where they can come back a little bit quicker. It sounds pretty revolutionary, and specifically high ankle sprains, it sounded like. So a lot of ankles so far, and just stay away from the foot and ankle right now. These guys are fast, and they need their speed and all their other skills.
When I was doing Countdown to Kickoff on Saturday on Antenna TV, the NDU station,
right.
I think they 16.2. Did a feature on that. I was standing off to the side, and I can only see the monitor. I couldn't hear what they were saying, but I think they did a story on that, and I believe Angelo DiCarlo has tweeted that story out again today because I saw that contraption on a photo on Twitter, so I may have to go back and watch that.
Mike's been around for a long time. On that staff over there, he might have the second longest tenure, I think, on the athletic trainer staff over there. When I first got here for the first probably 7 years I was with baseball, he was the baseball trainer over there, and he pulled away from baseball and has been, I think, predominantly with football for the last decade or so, I think. So he's been around a long time and seen a lot of those kind of injuries, obviously.
And Tony Jones Jr. apparently used that device, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
Against Miami.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you. That's the latest on Brandon Wimbush. Likely we will not get an update until Thursday, probably at about this time, when Brian Kelly meets the media once again. We'll take a timeout. Sean will host Rapid Fire coming up, and then we'll have a laugh or two as we take a look back at our preseason Major League Baseball predictions.
Wah, wah.
The champions, the wild card teams, we'll tell you what we thought, and we'll let you know how we did coming up in a couple of moments as SportsBeat continues on WSBT.
This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Fromm stands in, throws downfield, and it's intercepted by Notre Dame. Beautifully picked off by Drew Tranquil.
On Michiana's Sports Leader.
Wimbush on the run, he's going to go in!
96.1 FM, WSBT.
Look at this, hitting by Notre Dame. Niles Morgan again with a knockout hit.
It is Notre Dame at North Carolina, kickoff right around 3:30 on WSBT Radio Saturday. I'll be joined by Sean and Eric for Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat, noon to 2:30 here on WSBT Radio. Looking forward to breaking down the matchup with those two guys as we do every Saturday before the Irish take the field. Rapid Fire, a staple now on this program. We've also moved it into Game Day Sports Beat as well. It's very simple. Sean puts his head down at his desk and comes up with statements and questions to try to provide a stimulation of our minds.
Make our brains work.
That's right. And we try to come up with the best answer possible. I don't like to know what the questions are just for fun, so I'm going off the top of my head.
All right. This first one is not a rapid fire question, but I heard part of you and Eric talking about the sort of external perception of Notre Dame right now in the first hour. And there was a tweet that I saw Saturday, and it would have been after Notre Dame's win over Miami. But this was from a, not what you'd call a national pundit, but a media person in a big market from outside this area. So I think that kind of fits sort of what you were talking about, what the external media perception is right now. And here's what he said. Georgia blows out Tennessee today. Could have Tennessee, Nebraska, Notre Dame, and UCLA all looking for coaches this winter. So your take on that is what?
So that was this weekend.
That was Saturday, yeah. After Georgia blew out Tennessee, and again, it's like, how closely are you following this thing? Because Notre Dame's only loss is by 1 point to that same Georgia team. But I was shocked that he included Notre Dame in that list.
I'll say the same thing I said to Eric. The Brian Kelly hot seat story doesn't exist right now, and it does not come back to life unless there is just an absolute catastrophic change of fortunes, injuries. And with the way this team has been built and with the way they are playing the game, I would be surprised if that happens. So I'm just looking at this and just do not understand the thinking from someone outside the market. That, unfortunately, is a lazy reporter that is not doing his research.
I tend to agree. I mean, this is not a, as you, they're playing, Notre Dame is playing very well on both sides of the ball, and it's not a shell game. It's not like there's this tenuous situation where they're lucky to be in it. I mean, they are dominating teams in the second half. Not necessarily on the scoreboard, but from a defensive point of view, they hardly allow any points in the second half. They easily could have put up a lot more points if they really wanted to Saturday against Miami and even in a couple of other games this season. But they haven't gone that direction. So I'm just shocked as well. I think it's just a complete misread of the situation, and it's just more based on stereotype and some of the stuff that was out there coming into the season than anything.
If he writes that before the season, okay.
But at this point,
after a 4-1 start and your only loss is to a team that looks like one of the best teams in the country and you've blown out everybody else,
yeah.
I just would really have to read his entire story for him to sell me on how that is even a thought in his mind at this particular time.
Right.
Especially after all the money Notre Dame has spent in reshaping this program.
And it's and again, us inside this bubble, we can see a lot of changes. I realize there are people, even Notre Dame fans, who aren't sold on this whole thing, and they kind of have their own preconceived notion of what should and shouldn't happen. But I agree with what you're saying. It's night and day different right now, and I think he completely misses the mark with by including Notre Dame on that list.
Crazy.
All right, next question. Back to what we started off talking about. Scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you with Ian Book at quarterback for the Irish if Brandon Wimbush has to miss a game or more? A game or more. And you can do it in two parts if you want, because that's kind of mine.
That changes things.
I think there's a difference, one game and multiple games, personally.
Against North Carolina, my confidence level of Ian Book being the starter and Notre Dame winning at North Carolina at this particular moment would be, I'll just be conservative and say 6, with the ability to raise that up as the week goes on.
So you're at a 6 for this week?
For right now, and okay. I might boost that up as the week goes on. Now, going forward, that brings USC into play.
Mm-hmm.
If he would have to start that game, that gets tricky. USC is not playing well right now. They're a one-loss team that has not played, honestly, that well. They've scraped by, and finally, it caught up with them against Washington State. So, I'm just going to say 5 for now. That's a whole different ballgame.
We're dead even with the second part then. I'm an 8 for this weekend against North Carolina, in large part because Notre Dame runs the ball so well, 301 yards a game. North Carolina gives up over 220 a game on the ground. So I think this is a game, and then when you figure the defense into it and the whole thing, I think this is a game where they can figure out a way to make it work. They should be able to overpower North Carolina, even though the Tar Heels have been in some close games. And talking with Eric before coming in earlier today, before he came in for the first hour, he told me about that stat about previous quarterbacks, kind of a spot start situation, emergency start, being 7-1 under Brian Kelly. So, I mean, he's figured out a way in the past, a lot of ways in the past, to make it work for at least a game. But I'm with you. I'm 50-50 if it has to go beyond that, in large part, again, because no matter what we think about Ian Book and what we saw in the blue-gold game or any practices in the fall or last spring, yeah, he can throw the ball, and he's fairly accurate. He does all those things, but so is Brandon Wimbush, and even more so than Ian Book. And we have not seen Ian Book have to read a defense, have to change protections, have to make the reads and throw live. We don't know how he's going to do it. We were just talking, I think, yesterday that for as inconsistent as Wimbush has been as a passer, he's not turning the ball over all over the place. He's still protected the ball, and this is nothing against Book. We just don't know how he's going to be along those lines. Everything changes when he has to go out there. And again, maybe they can get by against Carolina because of the dominance of the running game, and as poor as Carolina has been against the running game, but also the I think, as I said a second ago, the factor with Wimbush and his ability to run opens up different lanes for the rest of those running backs as well. So even though he struggled up and down, I mean, his speed and the ability he has as a runner changes the complexion and how defenses have to look at them.
And Sean, this conversation differs if the supporting cast is playing different. If you put this situation on last year's team, I'm going below five, well below five, on both of your questions. But with the way the supporting cast has played around Wimbush so far this year, it gives you hope that things would work out, and I don't think this is going to be a long-term problem, we're doing hypotheticals right now, that they could withstand a couple of games. Just because everybody else around the quarterback position is playing better than last year, so it gives you the opportunity to help a quarterback along. And let's remember this. Had you asked this question at halftime of the Virginia game a couple of years ago when DeShone Kizer was becoming the starting quarterback, I would have said one, two, or three, because Kizer completed one pass in the spring game a few months before, and we had no expectations, nor did the coaching staff, as we found out. They didn't know what they had. So it's a bit of a guessing game, but I do feel comfortable with the way people are playing around the quarterback position. They can get the job done.
Well, and even with, again, going back to his lack of experience, you can say you're going to run the ball and you're going to run the ball to protect him and all that stuff, but unless you're up by two or three touchdowns, there are going to be some points where it's third and long and he has to put the ball in the air. And again, you just don't know how he's going to do either reading, reacting to blitz, any of that kind of stuff until it's live and he has to do it. We just don't know right now. So it's hard to...
It's a good question.
As good as he throws in practice, it's all different, as we found out, when it comes to game time. Okay, over under 1,500 rushing yards for one Mr. Josh Adams this season.
Now I have to get out a calculator.
I know. So here's the deal. He's on pace right now for 1,579 if he keeps up his current pace.
I'm going to say under. If you're saying that's the pace, the level of defenses are going to increase
at least
the second half of the year.
Yeah.
And you still have other people that can run the football effectively. I mean, he's had 17 carries the last 2 weeks. Now, that had to do with injury, scoreboard, opponent, of course, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just going to go under because of the competition level will get stronger as the season goes on. So I believe in Josh Adams, love the way he finished runs against Miami, but just factoring in the gimpy ankle, number of running backs, running quarterback in the starting lineup in Wimbush, and opponents getting better, I'm going to be the Debbie Downer and say a little under.
Well, and I mean, even if without the ankle and game situation the other day, he easily could have gone for 250, if not even more, against Miami, but because he tweaked it a little bit, and because of the score, they had the luxury of taking him out. Otherwise, it might have been a record-setting day for him. But, I mean, just look at C.J. Procise a couple of years ago. He was on pace to just go through the roof, and then he got to about mid-October and started taking some of those hits, and that's what allowed Adams at that point as a freshman to end up with over 800 yards. So I'm going under as well. I think between 12 and 14 is pretty realistic, or even 1,100 and 1,400 is pretty realistic, but based on a lot of things you said, even though at the same time, like Navy, for example, is one of the top rushing and scoring defenses that they're going to face, but it's kind of like Michigan State, who has Navy played to this point. So statistically, there are some better defenses they're going to face, just how much competition they've really faced. But just because of the fact that they have the luxury of some of these other guys, I think that kind of will lessen. I think they'll try to lessen the load, not increase it as the season goes on. All right, Notre Dame scored 49-plus points in three of its five games so far. Over under, 2.5 more times they hit that mark this season.
I'm going to say under. I don't know. Will they get to that mark again against North Carolina? It is a possibility.
Right.
Miami, Wake Forest, USC, Navy, I guess, is a possibility. Stanford, they're giving up a lot of rushing yards right now. I'm going to go under. I think the offense is going to be good, Sean, but that's asking a lot.
No, I know. And I'm going to go under as well because I went back and forth on that. And a lot of times, I go into these questions since I have to come up with them. I don't go in with a preconceived notion. I try to kind of come up with the question and then sit back and say, okay, what realistically is going to happen? And I'm going to be just a little bit under as well because, again, with USC's and Stanford, regardless of how many points they're giving up now, and even Wake Forest, I mean, they're obviously still playing good. Miami is playing well. I would think the two best chances would be this week against North Carolina and then against Navy as well. But even against Navy, you don't know how many possessions you're going to get because of the way they run their offense and all that stuff. So I'm going to go under as well. Okay. I think they've got a chance to do it a couple of times, but I don't think three. All right. I'm interested to see what you think about this one.
Toss up.
Which Irish defensive player is more indispensable, Jerry Tillery or Drew Tranquil? Darren just slammed his pen down just for...
You could argue those are the top two.
Right.
Boy, oh boy.
And that's where the question came from.
I mean, you know I'm a huge Tranquil fan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say Tillery just because you need that guy in the middle of the defensive line to do the job to make everything else happen. It kind of a domino effect
right from
there. So even though I love Tranquil's play, he has been terrific MVP candidate on this team. I got to say Tillery because of what he has done so far. And when you take a look at the rest of the depth chart, even though there are parts doing some good things, I just don't think there's a guy that can come close to Jerry Tillery right now.
See, and knowing how much that you like Drew Tranquil, and I do too, but that's why I thought this would be an even more interesting question to see which way you would go.
You can piece it together with some other guys.
Yeah, and I agree about the Tillery effect because when you kind of start from the inside out, we knew how important it would be for him to have a good season, and he's really having that so far. And just his ability to take on some of the double things and do the things that he does has allowed those three linebackers and Tranquil to be the top four tacklers. And then, oh, by the way, Tillery is the fifth leading tackler after those guys, and he's also leading the team in sacks. So, I mean, he's really just been an integral part of the whole thing, and I agree. Without that guy, that point of attack in the middle, I don't think all those other guys would be doing what they're doing right now.
Well said.
All right. We've got do we have time for a couple quick ones still?
I think we can make it work.
Okay. Fill in the blank. A month into the season, 20 of the 32 teams in the National Football League are at or below 500. This says blank about the NFL.
It's just a very competitive league at this time. There's a lot of balance. Anybody can beat anybody on any given Sunday, which is... unlike college football, to an extent, the big boys usually find a way to win.
It's what Pete Rozelle wanted back in the day, right?
Yeah.
All that parity. I mean, to me, it says it might be the weirdest season ever when you've got Buffalo, Philadelphia, and the Rams all sitting at 3-1, and the Patriots scratching their head at 2-2. I saw a thing on them today. Three of the four quarterbacks the Patriots have played this year have already passed for more than 300 yards. Mm. Only three quarterbacks did it all of last season. That just to me, but at least we've got a stable effect with Cleveland and San Francisco at 0-4. But it's going to be a crazy year. And hats off to the Rams with what they've done so far. That was hard to watch the end of that on Sunday. But I tell you what, they've got an offensive-minded head coach out there, and they already had some solid defensive players, and they've got it going. We've always seen teams like this, though, early on. Will they end up even being over 500? Because a lot of teams get off to fast starts. Can they make it hold up?
Rams were 3-1 last year.
This one I think you'll like. According to the Chicago Tribune, the Blackhawks and Bruins are in talks to play a little hockey at Old Notre Dame Stadium. Scale of 1 to 10, how much would you like that?
Well, first off, this is old news.
Is it?
This has been talked about by the NHL media for over a year.
Okay.
So, really, the Chicago Tribune does not have...
they're not breaking anything on this.
No, I mean, I've heard Bruins Blackhawks for a while now from the NHL perspective. There hasn't been anything said by Notre Dame about this. But it's been talked about for a long time by the NHL media. Once the Crossroads project was done, this would be the perfect location for a Winter Classic type game. So I've even talked about this on the program that it's a possibility. So yeah, it really wasn't anything new today, but I really think at some point it's going to happen. I'm not sure what year. And as a Bruins fan, that would be a 10 for me. That would be the best of both worlds.
And I would love it as well. Just very cool to have this kind of event at Notre Dame Stadium. And you're right, with the Crossroads and the video board and the whole thing, that has to play into it too. Are you a Tom Petty fan at all?
I liked his music, never bought an album, but would listen to a song when it was on the radio.
Any particular favorites?
You know what? Free Falling, obviously.
Yeah.
But
that's another Jerry Maguire song.
Traveling Wilburys, when he was a part of that. That is a very underrated album.
I agree.
That all those greats got together for. With Roy Orbison hitting the kind of the big finale with It's All Right.
Yep.
Is the name of the song?
All Right, yep. I won't try to sing it, but yeah. Just about anything from Full Moon Fever. I've got a lot of his CDs as well, and I put him, Bruce is my top guy, but I put Petty in the top probably four anyway. So, good stuff.
That's rapid fire. Sad. Very good. Let's go to break by giving you a chance to win Notre Dame hockey tickets. A four-pack of tickets to Friday night's game against Huntsville at 7:35 are up for grabs. We'll take caller 7 at 574-282-2696. Again, caller 7, 574-282-2696 wins the Notre Dame hockey tickets. And tickets are available for Friday and Saturday at the Compton Family Ice Arena. They have some great promotions, a ticket package for October. The Denver series features a free t-shirt night, so check out the schedule. Go to UND.com. 10 minutes in front of the top of the hour on WSBT. We've got 1 minute, unfortunately, so we're not going to have a lot of time to chatter for this particular segment. But just looking at our preseason Major League Baseball predictions, AL champions, Eric and Sean had Cleveland, and I had Boston, so we're still alive. And the National League, Eric and Sean had the Cubs, and I had the Dodgers, so we're looking good. Mm-hmm. My biggest miss was a horrible miss, and injuries destroyed my chances. I had the Mets winning the National League East.
My two biggest misses, I had the Blue Jays winning the AL East, the Giants winning the first wild card of the National League, and of course the Giants get the second pick in the draft. My third national, I had the Pirates as my number two NL wild card. The Rockies would have been my number three. So I was one off, I guess, there. So well, otherwise,
we all had the Cubs. We had the Dodgers. Eric had the Rockies. At least they made the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So all in all, we did okay. And our teams are still alive. I had the Dodgers winning the World Series. I didn't write down what you guys had, but you had Cleveland and the Cubs. You're still alive. And Eric had Cleveland and the Cubs. So all of us have our World Series participants still kicking. So far, so good. And the postseason starts tonight. Yankees hosting the Twins. Tomorrow, Rockies and Diamondbacks. Those winner-take-all wild card matchups. Cubs and Nationals Friday at 7:31 on TBS. Congratulations to Justin Zimpelman. He wins the four tickets to go see the Irish hockey team on Friday. More chances to win throughout the week.